Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host. I'll be guiding you about what I think of as the battle space of the war for the free world, with three tremendously interesting combatants in that space, at least the war of ideas component of it. We'll be speaking with Arno de Borsgrave, one of our country's most, well, really legendary international correspondents, foreign correspondents. We'll be getting his take on what is happening in Egypt and elsewhere in the Middle East that has profound repercussions for both the region and for us. We'll be speaking in segment three with Robert Zarate, one of the bright young stars of the national security community. He is with the Foreign Policy Initiative and will be talking with us a bit about the defense budget and what is happening to it, what it might mean if the worst eventuates. And finally, we'll be joined in segment four by Gordon Chang, our regular duty man on the Chinese and other developments in Asia, with some fascinating insights into changes that seem afoot inside the very senior-most reaches of the Chinese government. And again, we'll be looking at it from the perspective both of the Chinese and from our own. But first, I wanted to visit with you a little bit about the announcement late last week that President Obama is going to be sending 100 special forces personnel into Central Africa, immediately into Uganda, but in due course into three other nations as well. And the question arises, is this more of what we have had from the Obama administration in the application of something they call at the United Nations the responsibility to protect? Well, that's a fancy term for what seems to really translate in practice to our responsibility, that is to say, ours here in the United States, to go protect people, civilians, presumably, wherever we are told by others we must go in order to live up to this so-called R2P duty. And the one caveat, I guess, is that it can't be the case that we have actually any interests in the region. The point is that we're only expected to go places when, A, we're told by, you know, I don't know, the United Nations or the Arab League or the African Union or somebody else, it's permissible, it's necessary. But if we should actually have a vital interest at stake, well, they would almost certainly, as is true of the international community, so-called, more generally, deem that to be an inappropriate, impermissible act of, well, I don't know, American colonialism or such. Now, of course, you'll recall that R2P, or the responsibility to protect, was at work in the decision of the United States government to go into Libya, or at least over Libya, and drop bombs on Libya and send in cruise missiles into Libya. It was all, of course, on the grounds that we had to help stave off the kind of attacks that Muammar Gaddafi might otherwise have made against the people of his country, and therefore our responsibility was to intervene with our NATO allies, in this case, to protect the people of Libya. Now, never mind that the people of Libya have been killed, wounded, or dispossessed in large numbers in the course of the Civil War that was actually abetted by that air campaign by the United States, Britain, and France, and to a lesser degree other nations. And never mind either that the upshot of it all, something we'll be getting into a bit with Arnaud de Borchgrave shortly, is to say that we are bringing to power now a government in Libya that is dominated by the Muslim Brotherhood and or Al-Qaeda, likely to be bad either way for the innocent civilians of Libya. But coming to this business about Central Africa, there's this rogue by the name of Joseph Kony, who is a kind of psychopathic cultist, I guess is the best way to describe him, who has a organization called the Lord's Resistance Army, best known for the terrifying mayhem that it inflicts for the kidnappings, the enslavement, and military and sexual exploitation of children. And Joseph Kony's conduct over several years now has made him quite legitimately a public enemy throughout the region, sought for prosecution on war crimes charges by the International Criminal Court. Now, in this case, as in Libya, the president assures us, President Obama assures us that U.S. military operations will be strictly circumscribed. In sub-Saharan Africa, as in Libya, we will, in his immortal phrase, lead from behind. There will be relatively small numbers of American special operations forces there. They're not going to engage in combat unless, of course, they're attacked. They'll just train and direct the locals, who in these various countries will be charged with actually doing the heavy lifting of putting Kony out of business, much as we are, of course, still trying to help the Libyan insurgents due to Gaddafi. Now, I can certainly understand the desire to protect civilians from this scourge of the LRA, as it's known. There have been reports that this fellow Joseph Kony, has a relatively small number of loyalists, perhaps no more than 300. We've seen Republicans, including a man I admire greatly, Senator Jim Inhofe, pushing for this kind of action to be taken. And there's no question that Joseph Kony's abuse of children has earned him a special place in hell. The trouble is that, unfortunately, the fractious allies that we have may or may not be able, even with more help than we're promising at the moment, to be able to put Kony out of business. And at the very least, it's complicated by the fact that the Obama administration is opening up this new front at the same time that it and the Congress are actively making deep and far-reaching cuts in our defense capabilities. Again, something we'll be talking about with Robert Zarate shortly. We are, in short, at risk of breaking our military, even without assigning it new missions. And that will become much more likely if, as I fear, and I think Robert fears, we're going to see the super committee unable to do what is being asked of it, and massive across-the-board cuts will be imposed on the defense accounts of this country. Now, I'd close with one last point. We have an obligation, or if you will, a responsibility to protect innocent civilians in this country. And I'd feel better about taking on the responsibility or the R2P business someplace else if I were confident we're doing that adequately, and we are not. Just one example, Iran. At the moment, we are not addressing the threat it poses to our people and our country. And unless and until we do that, unless and until we take out that odious regime and the bomb-making capability that it is beavering away at and would bring to bear against us, I feel certain if we don't stop them, we don't have any business trying to provide protection to a lot of other people where our direct vital interests are not at stake. So my thoughts, I'd welcome yours. SecureFreedomRadio.org. Next up, we'll be talking with our friend, Arno de Varsgraaf.
We want to know what you think. Leave your comments at 1-800-332-7131.
I was able to lose the 80 pounds I gained due to pregnancy. It was pretty easy to eat whatever I wanted and not think about it.
The MetaSystem from Judy Singer has been helping make weight loss easier for a quarter century.
My husband's grandmother used it 20 years ago to lose weight for a wedding and said it was the only way to go.
The MetaSystem also has an excellent support staff.
They were very supportive. The first time that I ordered the product, they called me and suggested that I order a lower dosage to begin with. They didn't want me to jump the gun right off the bat, and it was nice to know that they actually cared.
And the weight loss is so dramatic, people wonder.
With the MetaSystem, I've got many questions about how I managed raising a baby and working full-time and lose the weight and eat whatever I wanted.
People who use it recommend it.
I suggested the MetaSystem to my mother, and she has lost 30 pounds.
Learn more about weight loss with Judy Singer's The MetaSystem by calling 800-711-JUDY, 800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer, the powerful, all-natural way to lose weight, 800-711-JUDY.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit ShariaTheThreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at Amazon.com.
Experts say there's no shortage of crude oil.
There really is no shortage of oil at the moment.
So why do gasoline prices keep going up?
There's all this fear that's out there, and that really goes a long way to making prices go up.
And home prices seem to be headed even lower.
We really aren't seeing any markets that are showing any sustained recovery at this point.
Now more than ever, is this a timeout or a double dip?
It could halt the economy's recovery in its tracks.
1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We are joined by Arno de Varsgraaf. He is one of our time's, I believe, most intrepid, certainly most storied international correspondents. He has also served in senior management positions in a number of different esteemed institutions, including my favorite newspaper, the Washington Times, and also with United Press International, where he serves as editor at large. Arno, welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. It's great to have you with us, particularly because you have been doing some characteristically path-breaking reporting on developments in a part of the world that is of great concern to all of us, and that is the Middle East. And I thought we might start with an article that you filed last week, I believe it was, on Egypt and developments there that has as sort of the leitmotif that, quote, the Arab Spring is dead. Tell us what is coming out of the Arab Spring and its aspirations.
Well, I can't tell you what's coming until we figure out how it all started. I arrived in Cairo on January 24th, 1952, and the next day was the famous Black Saturday in Cairo. 300 buildings were burnt down by the Muslim Brotherhood, And Nasser took over, Gamal Abdel Nasser took over 6 months later, not to overthrow the monarchy, which was done as an incidental bonus to what he was doing. He was doing this to block the Muslim Brotherhood. In fact, King Farouk was seen off at Alexandria. I was there when he was seen off by members of Nasser's team, and they waved goodbye to him. There was nothing violent about that. And that was, again, Muslim Brotherhood. We have to come back to that every time. And today, as you know, in Egypt, we're on the verge of a Muslim Brotherhood majority. And that's why the army is still hanging in them.
Yeah. Tell us, based on your considerable experience with these guys, Arnaud, what would come with the Muslim Brotherhood should it, in fact, prove ascendant in the elections that will be held sometime this year?
Well, it's pretty hard to figure out, given the fact that the Muslim Brotherhood poses officially today as a moderate organization, and that the Islamist extremists officially no longer belong to the body of this organization. I take that with a big grain of salt. Fascinating development in Libya in connection with this. A man that we renditioned by having him tortured by the in Bangkok is now in charge of Tripoli in Libya. He's the top military man there, Abdel Karim El-Haj. So all of these things are going on, and nobody's bothering to put it all together.
Yeah, I guess that's what we're hoping you'll help us do. Arnaud de Borsgraaf is our guest. He is the editor-at-large for the Washington Times and United Press International these days, an author, a columnist, a man who has covered this particular beat of the Middle East, as he just mentioned, for decades. And I guess this is really the point that that keeps coming up, Arnaud, is whether we are kidding ourselves, not only about the character of the Muslim Brotherhood, but about the likelihood that under its direction, or for that matter, that of its spinoff in, as you mentioned, Libya, Al-Qaeda, we're going to see something positive coming out for either the people of the region or for us.
Well, to think of democracy in Egypt, obviously it's something that many people aspire to, but let's not forget that the only time that Egypt in 5,000 years of history has known anything resembling democracy, it was between 1946 when the British gave up their mandate in the area and 1952 when Nasser took over.
Mm-hmm. So it's not likely to be coming about now.
No, of course not. And now there are multiplicity of parties, as you've seen. The former President Mubarak, now in jail, had a party that he controlled called the NDP, National Democratic Party. That has broken up into many factions that have now joined parties that didn't exist before. They've just invented the name, and all of that is designed to block the Muslim Brotherhood
yeah.
from getting a majority.
Is it likely that these anti-Muslim Brotherhood factions can, in fact, coalesce in Egypt, Arnaud, to prevent having, if not an actual majority in the parliament, the Brotherhood, that is, at least a functioning control, a plurality that gives them, for all intents and purposes, the dominant position there?
Well, that's a very good question, Frank, and there's no doubt in my mind that these small splinter parties now with new names will coalesce once the elections have taken place and block the Muslim Brotherhood from getting a majority in Parliament. And you've seen the most recent incidents. It was somebody in the television tower where these riots were taking place between the Christians, the cops, and the... We don't really know who the others were, but they were obviously various brands of Islam. And all of this was done with a rumor that turned out to be totally false, and that is that the cops, the Christians, had opened fire on the army, and that led to this the bloodshed last week.
Yes. Well, I'm just going to ask specifically on this question, how is it likely that the cops will fare under the next government there? You've seen many of them apparently fleeing the country already. Others, as you say, have been caught up in these massacres, really. Are they now an endangered species?
I think there's a great danger for the cops. They are, after all, a 10% minority out of a population. We have roughly 85 million people in Egypt. They are almost 10 million, the cops, and they are known as a rather underprivileged minority. There are some, of course, prominent personalities that rose to the top, such as Boutros Boutros-Ghali, the former Secretary General of the UN is a Copt, and he's still alive in Cairo, and I talk to him from time to time. He's very concerned.
Yes, well, I should be. Let's turn, if we may, Arno Dvorsky, to another part of the world that you have been, I know, covering closely, and that is Turkey. Speaking of Islamist takeovers, that seems well advanced now, and the implications, again, both for the Turks and for others in the region, not least, of course, Israel, but others as well, seems to be of an increasingly aggressive strain of this Islamist agenda. Is that how you see it? And if so, where do we see that likely to lead?
The way I see it is that they finally concluded that the door to Europe is closed. Europe today has about 20 million, the European Union has about 20 million Muslims, and if they add Turkey to that, it'll be 100 million Muslims. There's no way that's going to happen. They know that. They pretend to go on negotiating, and the Europeans do the same. It's a great pretense that's underway. And the new policy is looking east. They see the geopolitical balance of power shifting from west to east. They're looking at Central Asia. They're looking at China. And this is a major geopolitical shift on Turkey's part.
Do you see them aspiring to reestablish something akin to the old caliphate?
No, I don't see that. They're very sophisticated in Turkey. I'm sure you've been to Turkey several times in your life. One gets a distorted impression if one just stays in the Christian part or the Western part of Turkey, which is only 5% of the country. But I think there's no way you could bring back some kind of Islamist extremism in Turkey. It's much too sophisticated in its international relations.
Mm. Well, we'll be watching this closely with you and others, Arno Dvorsky. I'm afraid that there's a lot of that going on already, and whether it extends beyond Turkey's borders remains to be seen. Finally, let's turn quickly to Iran. Much of this plot has been reported of late, apparently an attack planned against certain individuals and assets in the United States. Is this evidence, in your estimation, Arno Dvorsky, of an increasing aggressiveness on the part of the Iranians as they approach the moment when they have the bomb?
Well, I think that they've been quite aggressive in recent years. When you put it all together, I don't think it's more aggressive now than it's been for the last 5 to 10 years. There's no question that they are moving towards a nuclear capability. And what's interesting is that three former CENTCOM commanders, General Abizaid, Arabic speaker, Admiral Fallon, and General Zinni, the Marine, all three, I've heard them, not even off the record, say that we have to learn to live with an Iranian bomb. Why? When you talk to them privately, they, of course, point out to Iran's formidable retaliatory capabilities up and down the Persian Gulf. And there's no way to get away from that. They do have the capability of shutting down the Gulf, but that would hurt them just as much as it hurts the rest of the world. So I don't believe it'll breach that. But what's interesting is to see that really people who really know the area say, be careful, because if we move into Iran, or if there's any kind of military action in Iran to prevent them from going nuclear, then watch out for the rest.
Well, this is another place we'll be watching closely. And again, we thank you for your help. Arno Dvorsky is, among other things, director and senior advisor of the Transnational Threats Project at the Center for Strategic and International Studies. Thank you so much for joining us, Arno. Great to talk with you. Next up, we have Robert Zavrate.
To SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey, parents. Finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi, son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
Oh, you know, I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I mean,
I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you.
For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
I'm a champion. Realize checks mechanism.
Hi, Shaquille O'Neal for Rad. This is not your normal PSA. Don't be stupid. Don't drink and drive. If you're going to go out and have a good time, it's fine. But designate a driver to drive home. Let's stop the madness. Don't drink and drive.
Public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Transportation, RAD, the National Association of Broadcasters, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Frank Effney. You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260 in Washington, D.C.
Now more with Frank Effney.
Welcome back. We are joined by Robert Zarate. He is the policy director at the highly esteemed Foreign Policy Initiative and a man who has some considerable experience on Capitol Hill and in the public policy arena more generally, including with our friends at the Nonproliferation Policy Education Center. He currently is one of the go-to guys on what is happening to the defense programs of the United States, or will, if the executive branch and the Congress have their way and strip enormous amounts of money from the investments that we have been making to date and should be making in national security. Robert, it's always great to have you with us. I was particularly pleased that we could take stock with you of what has been happening of late, because I think you wrote a really seminal paper about a month ago for the Foreign Policy Initiative entitled Defense Spending and the Super Committee. Give us just a little bit of an update on sort of what that's all about, and then how you think things are developing as the deadline for action by the Congress, this Congressional Super Committee specifically, nears.
Sure, Frank. As the audience may know, in August, the President and the Congress enacted a last-minute debt limit deal. That was a deal to raise America's ceiling on its debt limit. And as part of that deal, the law is requiring at least $1.2 trillion in long-term deficit reduction, that needs to be passed by Congress before January 12, 2012. And right now there is a super committee of 12 lawmakers that is meeting most days, and they're trying to hammer out such a deficit, long-term deficit reduction package before Thanksgiving, so that Congress, the full Congress, can have enough time to actually debate it. And I mean, the bottom line is, it's really unclear whether they're going to A, meet that $1.2 trillion mark, and B, the extent to which defense could be affected by any deficit reduction package. More worrisome, if this deficit reduction package isn't passed by January 12, 2012, the Department of Defense stands to take a hit at least of $600 billion over the next 10 years. And in reality, it's actually much more, given that there are also additional ceilings that will limit annual defense spending over the next decade if there is no long-term deficit reduction deal.
And Robert Zarate, there's also the natty problem that defense has already been hit with something on the order of, $465 billion, I'm told, in cuts that are over and above those that might befall it should this so-called sequestration process come a cropper.
That's correct, Frank. To begin with, the debt limit deal immediately imposed cuts over the next 10 years on defense spending and other national security spending. And the Obama administration, in implementing those immediate short-term cuts, is looking to cut. Actually, the number I've seen now is $489 billion. That's the guidance that the Office of Management Budget in the White House is giving the Department of Defense.
Wow.
And even before that, what's even worse is, you know, Obama had touted how Secretary Gates had made as much as $400 billion in savings and reductions to the Department of Defense budget in 2009 and 2010. Or in 2010. So we're talking about a lot of money that's already been cut out of the DOD.
Yeah. And Robert, in the past few days, some of those responsible for the United States military, specifically Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta and the new chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, General Martin Dempsey of the Army, have been on Capitol Hill expressing profound worry about what the effect of certainly more cuts will be, but I think misgivings about what's already in the pipeline. What was your takeaway from that, and what do you think its impact might be on Capitol Hill?
Well, I think it's important that Secretary of Defense Panetta and General Dempsey are making the case against no further defense cuts, because their bottom line is defense already has been cut a lot.
It gave it the office, as they say, right?
Yeah, that's correct. And there are other areas such as in entitlements and other areas in which we can try to find savings, trying to restructure these programs. I mean to say things, you know, like civilian entitlements, not military entitlements. At the end of the day, it's going to be a very tough fight, I think, on the super committee to try to find $1.2 trillion. And I think a lot of folks are worried, but military leaders are out there, and hopefully President Obama will join them. And one interesting exchange, Chairman McKeon, I believe, had asked Secretary Defense Panetta whether there was any daylight between him and President Obama. Secretary Panetta claimed there was no daylight. I hope that President Obama will join Secretary Panetta in making that case for no more defense cuts.
Yeah, I certainly do as well. The issue of breaking the military, which you are following closely, Robert Zarate, at the Foreign Policy Initiative, is what's on the line here, and we will be covering it, as I hope you will, more here at Secure Freedom Radio in the days ahead. Let me turn to another issue that you and your executive director at FPI, Jamie Fly, have addressed in recent days. A very critical examination of the so-called reset policy with Russia, arguing essentially that it has failed. Tell us why you think so, and what are the implications of that, if so?
Sure. Well, I think that the current so-called U.S. reset policy with the Russian Federation, and for the folks out there, the basic idea was, if we try to accommodate and give in to some of the things Russia has wanted for a long time, that Russia will be more friendly. and be more amicable to American interests. And I think it's difficult to make that claim. And just as an example, the Russians continue to provide cover for the Iranians in international fora, and now the Syrians. Most recently, they blocked a Security Council resolution that would have tried to condemn the Assad regime for the 3,000 to 4,000 people now who have been killed by that regime, the slow-motion humanitarian disaster there. And I think the bottom line is that the administration has very much overpromised the dividends off of the reset. And what's worse, President Medvedev, who a lot of folks had claimed would or could move the Russia towards a more moderate orientation in its foreign policy. Surprise, surprise, Medvedev is giving way so that Putin can run again for the presidency.
Yeah. Surprise, surprise, as you say, really no surprise to people who've been watching their dynamic. It's been fairly clear for a long time that Putin is really calling the shots. Robert Zarate, if now his power is completely unchecked, knowing what we know about Vladimir Putin, what is it likely to mean if the United States persists in trying to accommodate the Russians as it has in the past at every turn, though there's some mention now being made of a greater degree of attention being applied to the so-called Reset 2.0 phase on human rights, but is there really any change in prospect as you see it on the part of the Obama administration? And if not, what is a guy like Putin likely to make of that and do with it?
Well, I think that the Obama administration, my sense is that they are trying to figure out how to move forward. You know, they're sending over Michael McFaul, who was in the White House previously, to be the new U.S. ambassador in Russia. Certainly at the staff level in the Senate, you're hearing grumblings about McFaul's nomination and the idea that they might want to try, I don't know if this is going to happen, but try to link his the passage of his nomination with, for example, more progress on human rights legislation. There's a great bill out there called the Sergei Magnitsky Rule of Law Accountability Act. Just in brief, Mr. Magnitsky was a tax lawyer who was trying to bring daylight and sunshine on some of the corrupt abuses in the Russian government. He got locked up, detained. Under Russian law, he can only be detained without trial for a year. He died due to abuse a few days before that year expired. And his case has sort of become a cause célèbre for folks who work on human rights issues in Russia. And so, you know, I think there's a lot of things certainly the Congress can do. I think the Obama administration can right now do something by just being more stop overpromising, basically, yeah, on the dividends of the U.S.
Overpromising and underdelivering, I think, is the indictment here, as you have said so well with Jimmy Fly in your piece at the Foreign Policy Initiative. Check it out. Robert Zarate is its policy director and our guest. Thank you very much for joining us, and I hope you'll come back to us soon on these and other issues. Robert, keep up the great work in the meantime. Next up, we'll be talking with Gordon Chang.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medications, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's MetaSystem, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call, and I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the MetaSystem. Call 1-800-711-JUDY, 1-800-711-JUDY. The MetaSystem from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi. This is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas.
Like the real special forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real special forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a non-profit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its special forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home is built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Dennis Prager thinks there should be a simple standard to textbooks.
I'll tell you how I think a textbook should be written. This is what happened. Period.
That is the role of a text.
And if nearly everybody who did something important in American history, if 78.9% of them were WASP males, then I want 78.9% of the textbook to reflect that fact.
I care about truth.
That's why I'm not on the left.
The Dennis Prager Show. Well, in the morning and out to school. Weeknights at 10 on 1260 WRC. New Choice, Intelligent Talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone.
At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org. Even if it's just everyday stuff.
Like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say
sweater?
That?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined, as I'm very pleased to say we are each week, by one of the preeminent experts on Asia, I think, in the United States today. His name is Gordon Chang, of course. Gordon is our duty expert, particularly on the China beat. As few, I think, understand it better and certainly write and speak to it more effectively. In your case, Gordon, of course, in your column at Forbes.com, and I gather now a regular appearance at World Affairs website, as well as, of course, in your books, which include The Coming Collapse of China and Nuclear Showdown North Korea Takes on the World. Welcome back, Gordon. You've got two important pieces, one in your Forbes column and one in World Affairs that I want to talk with you about most immediately, that really address the question of changes that are afoot inside the Chinese government, changes that rather ominous from our perspective. Tell us what you make of them and what we should take away from the possibility that these changes will continue to trend as they are now.
I think the most important development in China these days is the rise of the Chinese military within the Chinese political system. In the last three decades of the 20th century, the military had really lost power as fewer and fewer generals and admirals sat on top Communist Party posts. But in the middle of, let's say, 2003 or so, the military started to gain prominence because current leader Hu Jintao needed the support of the generals and admirals to push aside his predecessor, Jiang Zemin, who was trying to linger in the limelight. And this made flag officers essentially power brokers inside the Communist Party. And that dynamic has continued up to now. There's another transition that is supposed to occur soon. And again, the generals and admirals are making their presence felt. Well, this is not only meaning a real change in the power balance inside the Communist Party, it's also a change in the nature of the regime as the military becomes perhaps more powerful than civilians. And that is leading to all sorts of bad consequences.
Yeah. And how is it manifesting itself both within the sort of dynamics of the Politburo, but also within the sort of latitude that the Chinese military is being given by the political authorities budgetarily and perhaps in terms of policy?
Starting with the budget, the budget for the Chinese military, from all that we can tell, has increased dramatically over the last 5 or 6 years and in gaining faster than the growth of the underlying economy. But this is really related, this has created a sort of mentality among the generals and admirals that they can do anything that they want. So they're not thinking about what they should do, they're thinking about what they can do. And in there, they're thinking about challenging the United States in the South China Sea, in space, in cyberspace. This has created a very aggressive Chinese military. And where this leads to, I don't know. But we absolutely need to refocus our military to meet the Chinese challenge.
Yeah. And in that connection, Gordon Chang, as you may know, our colleague Bill Gertz, who writes regularly from the inside the ring perspective on what is going on with China and the U.S. military's response, had a very important piece we discussed last Friday concerning China's build-up not being matched by the United States, some efforts known as air-sea battle to respond and create capabilities that are appropriate given what China's up to in, as you say, the South China Sea and space and cyberspace, seems to have come a cropper, at least temporarily, as a result of a Chinese influence operation aimed at preventing such a brief tooling of our own capabilities in light of this this trend you're describing in Beijing. Would that surprise you that the Chinese have that kind of SWAT here? And if we fail to make these sorts of adjustments in our own military posture and capabilities, where do you think that leads?
China has been trying to exercise more and more influence in the United States and especially Washington, and this is just unparalleled, them trying to affect our own defense posture. But we see it more visibly in the discussions right now in Congress over the currency bill, where China has marshaled lobbyists, it's marshaled Americans who have business interests in China. And we see this more generally in China sort of trying to affect discourse on our campuses with the Confucius Institutes, organizing demonstrations when Chinese leaders come to China, and when others who protest against China take to the streets. The Chinese government is there to organize counter demonstrations. So this is a major influence operation directed against the United States on many facets, and we absolutely need to counter this.
Yeah. Gordon Chang is our guest. He is a columnist with Fox News, I should say a contributor to Fox News. He is a columnist with Forbes.com and also at World Affairs. And Gordon, you've written as well about something that I think bears on this question of the future viability of many of these businesses, these American businesses in China, namely a renationalization, a hard turn to the left on the part of the Chinese, that signals, you know, foreign competitors are going to have an even harder time there. How does that translate, in your estimation, to the all of these questions of the appropriateness of the policies that the Chinese would influence into adopting?
The Chinese government and the Communist Party are really going in all the wrong directions. And since about 2006, we have seen the Chinese government really start to attack foreign business. You know, first of all, it started out with China trying to block acquisitions of Chinese enterprises by foreign companies. And then it became in the renationalization of the Chinese economy with the government pouring more money in, and it's with the indigenous innovation product accreditation rules, which are meant to take technology from foreign companies. Basically, the Chinese leaders have given up on Deng Xiaoping's policy of reform and opening up, as they've embraced a new economic paradigm of closing the country down. And this has really led to all sorts of very, very bad consequences, not only in China itself, but also for the foreign business community, of course.
Yeah. On top of stealing their technologies, they're actually making the playing field very, very uneven. Gordon, it's against this backdrop in part that, of course, we saw the Senate of the United States approve the currency manipulation sanctions bill. It seems as though Speaker of the House John Boehner has said absolutely no way he's going to allow its counterpart to go through the House. So presumably that bill will die. Where does that leave us, do you think?
Well, it's not dead yet, because if there is the momentum that is created by the Senate passage, it may convince Speaker Boehner to maybe give a more open attitude towards it. I don't know. You know, at this point, you're absolutely right. It does look dead. But this is going to grow. I mean, this bill has been in the Senate and in the House, and it's passed both houses in different years and different Congresses. And I think that we are seeing the Chinese intransigence really sort of leaving the U.S. no option but to go through a legislative route. And that's going to be the big story this year, if not next year.
One other item before we let you go, Gordon Chang. We had the South Korean president in Washington last week. Congress gave him a present, finally, of a free trade agreement. Our president took him on the road to sort of extol its virtues. Where are we on that important relationship against, again, the backdrop of a rising China?
South Korea has really moved much closer to the United States with Lee Ming-bak, the current incumbent. And the United States has actually, in the last couple of years, moved closer to South Korea. So the relationship is very, very strong at this moment. And it has to be because North Korea engaged in two horrible provocations last year with China's backing. North Asia is becoming very dangerous, and the United States and South Korea are reacting in response.
And in just in 15 seconds, the trade deal, a good deal for us?
It's a good deal for both countries, both economically and geopolitically.
Good. Well, we will be watching its implementation with you, Gordon Chang. As always, your insights are deeply appreciated. I think what you're doing to monitor these trends in the Chinese firmament is of incalculable importance because, as I think you've indicated, we're not seeing enough attention paid to either the remilitarization or the renationalization, and their implications are very profound indeed, both for the Chinese people and for us. Gordon, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks to all of you for doing so as well. I hope come tomorrow you will do so once again. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.